Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Eric Quorum, founder of AIM7. Welcome back to The Blueprint, where we distill cutting-edge science, leadership, and life skills into simple tactics optimized for your busy lifestyle and goals. Recovery isn't what you do just after your workout. It's really a lifestyle. And today, elite researcher Peter Tierney reveals his game-changing recovery framework to decode exactly what your body needs based off of a host of different scenarios, whether you're stressed or sore or stiff. So whether you're a serious athlete or someone just trying to perform at your best each day, you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. Peter brings over 13 years of experience working with elite athletes in rugby and soccer, and he's now a senior research scientist at Lululemon. You're going to learn how to assess across four key areas to pinpoint where you specifically need recovery and help right now to take tailored action. From battling frustrating cramps to optimizing nutrition, hydration, and sleep, this discussion makes recovery very intuitive. So let's get right to it. Let's lean in and learn from the best. Peter, what is the S.H.I.T recovery framework?
See, you spelled it out, but I can say it. So the recovery framework is somewhat consolidated or simplified version of my sort of approach to recovery. And hopefully, like, this is a guide. Recovery is this enormous umbrella of considerations. It's not just the one strategy you do straight after a gym session or a competition. It's the whole day and it's long term. So this is specifically, this framework for me is useful in a morning context or like a check-in. Mm-hmm. So you can say to yourself or to athletes you work with, how do I feel? And it's based on also those other questions that precede that. What phase of training or competition am I in? If I'm a team sport athlete, am I in preseason where my volume and intensity is going to be quite high, but I know that that's leading to adaptation down the road? Am I in a peak competition international window where I play 3 fixtures in 7 days? And so those questions are ones that I would always have in my mind as well. I maybe don't ask an athlete every day because if I'm working with them, I know those pieces of context. But how I feel, I've sort of bucketed it. It's a little bit catchy as well, but it is how it operates. It's like stiff, heavy, irritable, or tired. And they're the 4 sort of headings that make up shit. And for stiff, for example, I would say, you know, if you're unable to move as freely as you desire. For heavy is like heavy legs, so like really high levels of soreness, typically legs, but obviously can be upper body as well. Irritable, that would be where I'd bucket some of those ones that you'd mentioned around like mood or feeling frustrated or angry or like distracted from training. And then the T is tired. So literally, like, if you're sleepy, if you can't focus, if you don't have like motivation to train. And I guess the reason for splitting it out into those 4 categories is not every recovery strategy is potentially optimal or suitable for every state that you are in. So if you're tired or stiff, I wouldn't say that the intervention should be the same for both of those things. And so what I've tried to do within this framework is propose high level routes that you can pursue. So if you feel stiff, my recommendation based on the evidence, so based on the scientific literature, based on like my own practice as well, my own experience with working with athletes and also peers and conversations, if you're feeling stiff, I would recommend potentially like some movement. So some mobility work, some low level movement or massage, or potentially a contrast bath. That's like another strategy that you can use. And I can go into detail of all the different categories, but the idea of the framework is that sometimes if you only feel one of those 4 things, that's maybe okay. Like we said, You probably, if you're training to a reasonable level, you might be a little bit tired or you might have a little bit of DOMS. That's fine. If you feel 2 of those things, that's where I think you probably need to take some action. So maybe combine a strategy from both of those streams. So maybe that's a nap if you have time, or it's a little bit of massage as well. If you feel 3 of those things, I would definitely consider adjusting training. So like we said, maybe that's volume or maybe that's intensity. Maybe that's a little bit of both. And if you feel all 4, or if you feel shit, then I would certainly recommend reducing stimulus, taking out some key stressors as well. So that's the sort of like purpose. And hopefully it is useful for an individual athlete. Like, you know, not everyone has a coach with them all the time. So maybe that's something they can screenshot on their phone and just check in with themselves in the morning. So kind of back to our earlier discussion around how do you layer in those contextual variables with the objective data from wearables? Well, I think this is a way you can do that. Or hopefully it's a useful resource for a coach, just to say as a prompt of a conversation, hey, how are you feeling? Oh, I'm a little sore, I'm heavy legged. Okay, well, like, have you done these sort of two things as a high level sort of check?
I think it's great. I think it's phenomenal. When I first saw this, I was like, yes, I love this, because there's multiple parts to recovery. And I think it's overdone, by the way, too. I think people need to understand, to your point that you've made multiple times, you know, our humans are adaptation machines. Like, we're always trying to adapt. And there are periods of time where you need to push hard, maybe harder than normal, to get an adaptation that's optimal. The longer you train, the longer you've exercised, the more fitness you've done over years, the harder you're going to have to work to kind of get some of those marginal benefits. With an elite athlete like that you and I have worked with, there are periods of time where, guess what? It's just going to be hard. And if we're, you know, an Olympic qualifier or whatever, like, it is what it is. Like, I don't care about your HRV. Go run. We got to go win, you know, and then we'll deal with this later. Now we can do some modalities and things to make you feel better and all that kind of stuff. But when I was kind of towards the latter part of my time in pro football, there was all this like, you know, just go get in the hot tub or just go get in the cold tub. And it's like, no, like, you need to pair the right thing with how you feel or what the problem is. You don't just throw things at the wall.
100%. And there is another visual that I've shared out, which is trying to sort of highlight exactly that, and that there are long-term principles to recovery as well. So some things are very cheap. Some things are expensive in terms of recovery strategies. And often it is the cheap or the slightly or the free or the, you know, those avenues that are probably most beneficial. And one thing in my time working in England, which we coined, and I don't take credit for this, this was our team, our performance team, but the terminology we used was like the other 22 hours. And the idea that was in soccer in the UK. So the idea was that recovery is the other 22 hours outside of football or soccer. And that is recovery. It's not just the 10-minute ice bath. It's not just the foam rolling or whatever else. It's all of your behaviors linked to sleep. Recovery strategies, of course, are included in that, but also nutrition as well and habits outside of that. So that terminology is one, I think, that landed really well with athletes in that setting, but also just as a concept for everybody. I think it's a really cool, really cool sort of notion to have. So hat tip to the crew at the FA for coining that one.
Yeah, that thought process leaked over into the States. And I think I probably ripped that off a few times with my athletes. Now, I don't even think about that, like with myself as a 43-year-old dad. I don't think about recovery like that. I just think about, how do I better cope with stress? And how do I, to the best of my ability, regulate what comes in? And then when things are out of my control, which is a lot of times, how am I going to engage with that stressor psychologically, typically? Because I can go to the gym and that's really not the biggest load on my life.
If you're looking for a speaker for your next event, I'd love to come out and share with your team how they can turn stress into strength. Leaning on my experience in developing world-class athletes and my doctoral work in sleep and stress resilience, I'll teach your team an actionable framework for how they can build the capacity for more stress with less cost, so they can consistently operate at an elite level. In the past year, I've shared this message with wealth managers, investors in commercial real estate, CPAs, and more. And if you're interested in learning more, just click the link in the show notes or visit www.ericcorum.com.
Let's talk about muscle cramps for a second. I'm in Texas. It's hot. It's humid. Interestingly, though, in the places that I've trained athletes where it's the hottest, the most humid, Tallahassee, Florida, in the deep South, when we were well-trained, like, we didn't have cramping issues all the time. And so it wasn't as big of an issue. It's kind of interesting. But like, you know, you see on TV, people are cramping and like, oh, it's all hydration. Well, it's not really all hydration. Can you talk about the multifactorial problem that cramping is and what do we think leads to cramping and what people can do about it?
Yeah, I will say, like, there's still a lot to be discovered, not discovered, but to be sort of fully validated or like fleshed out in cramping, because there's still some unknowns in the area. But to me, like, the same principle as we've just talked about with like recovery or training, that often people narrow in and focus on the event or the specific time. And they say, oh, I haven't drank water in 30 minutes. It must be because of like hydration. But it's the time, sort of weeks and months prior to that, that can also contribute. So one of the biggest things for me is just like tissue tolerance or capacity. So if I cramp, let's just use calves, because that typically is a high cramp area in a lot of athletes. So do I have the sufficient strength and capacity in the relevant muscle groups in my calves to tolerate the needs of my competition? If I don't, well, then, I mean, that's likely a large and even larger contribution than other factors. So that's probably the first thing I'd start with. Okay, so that's like physical preparation, like 101. You develop not only a specific muscle group, but you develop the whole system or the person to be ready to perform in whatever their sport is. That's like not even something we discuss, because it's sort of that second nature now. The other parts of it, though, and I do think are in the days and maybe week leading up to competition, can be around nutrition and hydration.
Mm-hmm.
I separate those two things out. They're obviously interlinked in sort of the whole system. But one, yes, being appropriately hydrated can potentially have a positive, or I guess a positive way of mitigating or avoiding cramps, but also appropriate levels of carbohydrate and muscle glycogen. Your muscle, it's the same as the capacity. Your muscle, if you have a longer event, has to have enough sufficient fuel for you to sustain your output for that entire event. So if that is a football game, a soccer game, basketball, you need sufficient carbohydrate stores in the days leading up to the event, but also intra-competition, so within the event as well. So they're, I think, the big ticket items. They're the things really, like if you put on the, I think I have a visual of this, like the timeline leading up to a cramp. But if you on the bottom of that pyramid, or the bulk of that timeline is the capacity, the physical training, the things, the developing of fitness. Then you lead into sort of fueling, hydration, and then cramps can still happen, irrespective of all those things. Maybe it is hotter and you are more dehydrated. Maybe your output in a team sport capacity is greater because one of your teammates is injured and you have to increase your intensity or whatever that might be. So cramps can definitely still happen. And one of the strategies, which I have personally, and I know a lot of peers have found quite good success with, is with things like pickle juice. And that seems to be one which, and I don't know if you had, have you ever used this in?
Oh yeah.
So you can get these sort of ready-made ones that have a little, maybe like black pepper and lime and whatever else. Or oftentimes, depending on where you are, you go to the store and you pick up a jar and you make it yourself. And you know, I've done that as well. So that can be one. And I think the exact mechanism isn't particularly like, I wouldn't say like established, but it's thought to, because you don't even have to ingest pickle juice. So it's not, you have to digest it. You can swirl it in your mouth and then spit it out, which if you had ever seen some of the rugby players that we worked with, that was often the case. You'd see us throw something on and onto the pitch and then they'd spit it out. It probably looks disgusting, but that was one of the strategies we used. And it's thought to sort of shortcut this like muscle excitation that is thought to be linked to cramping. So that's sort of the sort of key mechanism and maybe the potential strategies that you can use.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Cramping is kind of a mystery sometimes. I'm curious about adult cramping, like when you're just laying in bed and all of a sudden you cramp, you know, like people that are in their 40s and 50s, I've heard about like getting, we call them Charlie horses, right? Like they're laying in bed like, oh, I got a cramp. Like, why is that?
Yeah, that one is complex to me. And I've had some of those as well. To me, that seems to be, and again, I don't know if this is particularly like established in like the literature, but it can be like strength through range. So sometimes like, I guess I'm trying to think of an example of a muscle group. Say, okay, like a hip flexor.
Mm-hmm.
If I flex my hip to a point that I haven't trained it within, where my muscle's contracting like very tightly, that has often leads to cramps for me. So I would be curious if it is linked to potentially like a strength. And it probably goes back to the conversation we had around tissue capacity. Like, is it strength through range, like end range position?
But what if you're laying in your bed and your leg's straight and all of a sudden you just cramp?
I guess, but even still, like that's the point of like you're lengthening a muscle or a tissue potentially beyond where it's normally been. So that's sort of my hypothesis, at least. Whether we prove that one out or not, I have to try get a few volunteers to do a study on that one.
That'd be a really weird study. Like, we're just going to wait around until, and like, you know, record somebody like in bed until like 2 weeks later, they're just like, ah, you know, like we got it, you know, like EMG, like it took multiple weeks. That'd be a very, we recruited 20, 40 to 50 year old men and women. You know what I'm saying? It would just be like an interesting, like IRB approval. I just find cramping fascinating. Always have. I think there's psychological components to this. there's things that we're just not going to fully understand. But I do think when it comes to athletes, being acclimatized to the environment and, as you said, tissue tolerance, training and adaptation to the demands, to you supersede even like the worst case scenario. And if you train that in an appropriate way and acclimatize somebody to very high heats, it's an advantage. And you typically won't have as many issues. It's funny to me too, and just my last comment on this is that we would train these athletes and all this stuff. And then in college, we would like, oh, we're going to travel to the game. And the night before, we're going to feed them like fried chicken and ice cream. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And then the next day, they're just loaded with fat. And then they wonder why they're sluggish coming out. That was just a big gripe of mine.
Yeah. But the psychological point, just to finish on the, I guess, the cramping part, certainly is a factor as well, as it is with all performance. And I do think I've heard cases and scenarios of athletes who consider themselves, I guess, like, they have high anxiety or they're, you know, small things stress them out and stuff. And there's even one athlete I'm speaking to at the moment too. Really challenging situation because, like, to me, you know, all of those key things, they seem to think that they're addressing, like fitness, sort of like calf. It can happen mostly in calves, but strength or reactive strength, maybe hydration levels. So there's maybe a little bit elements, I think we're talking about, like the fueling within competition. But also that athlete has said that they're quite like anxious and stuff. So I do think there's potentially something there as well. But the other one, I guess if a cramp does actually happen, stretching a muscle does seem to sort of ease a cramp. So there's something again in like whether the stretching sort of like can affect the muscle excitation as well. And it also makes me think of a sort of like training through end range is like where the muscle like relax after contracting to a point. So yeah, very interesting topic.
Yeah, I've seen a guy gets a hamstring cramp and they would try to straighten leg, stretch it, and then they're rubbing ice on it. It's kind of funny to watch. It's definitely not funny to experience, especially if you've seen somebody get a full body cramp. In football, we would have that happen during training camps, and that was frightening. I mean, it is a horrific experience, especially if they can't get the needle in for the IV. It is incredibly painful. If you learned something today in this conversation with Peter, do me a favor, leave us a 5-star review on whichever listening platform you are joining us from, as this is an excellent way you can help us grow the show. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.